The New York Times reports that President Trump, or more likely Vice President Mike Pence, has filled top positions at the Department of Health and Human Services with individuals who have devoted their adult lifetimes to the anti-abortion cause. Well, here in Oregon, the Portland Democratic Socialists of America has organized a panel on reproductive justice to be held on November 17th. With details about that, here is the Old Moles' Jan Hocken to talk with Dr. Xenia Junkier, who will be on the panel. Jan.
Xenia Junkier, welcome to KBOO this morning.
Thanks for having me, Jan. I appreciate it.
Well, we'll be talking later, giving people details on the panel this Friday, and you'll be speaking along with other reproductive justice activists here in Portland. But let's start with the most recent organizing campaign that resulted in House Bill 3391. Oregon has arisen as a sort of beacon on the hill nationally in terms of the very depressing terrain so many reproductive rights activists face in other places in the country. And this was quite a progressive bit of legislation, and it came out of a very broad vision of reproductive justice guiding that, the organizing behind it. So let's talk a bit first about that bill, what's important about it, and then what's involved in fulfilling and continuing to work to fulfill its promise.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think you're right when you call it the most progressive piece of legislation in the country. I think that, you know, that's language that's been used in the media, and it's also language that we used internally when we were advocating for the expansion of services and the addition of services in this bill. I think the top few things that are really important about this bill are, number one, the codification of the right to abortion in Oregon law. The second would be that there's a non-discrimination clause, which means gender non-conforming folks don't have to prove that they deserve services based on their gender marker, et cetera, or get denied services based on their gender marker. And the other component that was a really exciting component was the expansion of services for folks who are categorically excluded from Medicaid, including undocumented women. So being able to have access to postpartum care is really important and something that we really pushed for, and I think was something that was a real challenge because it was easy for those pieces, as it often is for a lot of our communities of color, to become invisible in pieces of legislation. But through the work of the Pro-Choice Coalition and really strong advocates as part of that coalition, we were able to keep those particular components. So I think we're really happy with the bill. You know, we know that there's a lot of work to do, but we see this as a success and are working on the implementation now.
You mentioned the pro-choice forces, and there's been quite a sea change in thinking about abortion within a broader reproductive justice framework versus some of the early organizing here in Portland around reproductive rights, which was in the 80s, a broader vision that went beyond access to abortion. How do you think about the concept of reproductive justice and how it goes beyond pro-choice politics?
Yeah, I think I really hold by the definition and the framework of reproductive justice that came out of the work of Sister Song and a lot of folks who were saying, you know what, you're talking about choice, you're talking about access, you're talking about families, but you're not really considering all of the other indications of how we understand people to have autonomy and the ability to make choices that impact their families, regardless of what others believe and how others believe those choices should be made. And so I think that one of the exciting things about using a reproductive justice lens, especially at the work of NARAL, is that we can push not only ourselves internally, but our constituents to see choice as much more than just one's access to and right to choose, but really taking into account factors like economic justice, racial justice, gender justice, understanding how the social determinants of health will actually figure into what kind of access people can actually have. You know, we talk about access a lot. We talk about meaningful access a lot. We talk about choice, but I still think that we are at a place where we're not necessarily talking about race and gender and sexuality and economic justice and immigrant justice. And I think we need to be at a place where we're having all of those conversations when we talk about choice and when we talk about, you know, family planning or whatever kind of language that we want to use around how and when people decide to become parents or expand their family or
There are different constraints on choice mm-hmm. in different contexts that yeah. you can have. On one level, an argument has been made throughout the history of feminism that wealthy women have always had more choices, including the choice of access to an abortion when it's not legal. Mm-hmm. And even in the post-Roe v. Wade era, mm-hmm. choices are powerfully constrained depending on your economic situation, and race and class intersect around those constraints mm-hmm. in powerful ways. So the vision also is supporting women in carrying children into the world, as well as ending pregnancies that are unhealthy or that they choose not to carry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for me, coming from a space where I was working a lot with children and families, and my background has a lot of, you know, education and, you know, work with children and families, I came to this work believing that, yes, we need to support a person's choice to choose, and we really need to support when their choice is, yes, I want to bring a child into this world. And what does that mean? What kinds of services need to be available? What kind of healthcare needs to be available? How do you have access to culturally relevant and appropriate services, stable housing, etc., so that children and families can thrive? And so for me, those are the really exciting parts about expanding this idea of choice, is that we're talking about the full spectrum, not just that act of choosing to become a parent.
And transformation on a very broad level, both the healthcare system, what it means to have a healthcare system, and broader notions of health.
Yeah, absolutely.
Healthy communities.
Yeah, we had a lot of those conversations when we talked about expanding services for folks who are categorically excluded. And I think it was really important to us that people were able to access services when they needed them, and that when you delivered, your services don't get cut off, and then you are no longer somebody who gets to access these services. It's not fair, it's not just, and it certainly isn't how we want our community to be treated here.
Now, there's kind of a loophole for Catholic healthcare institutions like Providence that governs about a third of the hospital beds in Oregon, and access to hospital care is very important for mm-hmm. women in many pregnancies. And as long as there's a heartbeat, they will not end a pregnancy in Catholic hospitals. There's also access to contraception, abortion services through Providence healthcare plans. Mm-hmm. What about that aspect of this law that and bringing them into compliance?
Yeah, you know, it's something that I can't speak specifically to. This is an area that's newer for me. I mean, I recognize the regulations and the stipulations around services that they can provide, but I didn't know the depth and the breadth of it. I really was able to learn from my colleagues just how intricate those pathways are to making sure that folks have access to these services. So I think as a coalition, one thing we're doing is just making sure that moving towards the implementation of REA, and that we are holding folks accountable to the language that is in our bill that states that folks have the right to access this particular service.
So there's quite a bit of organizing and confrontation on that front.
Yeah, I think that we're nowhere near done. And
but, you know, these big religions are big religions for a reason. They often can be quite flexible and resourceful when mm-hmm. they have to. And Providence, for example, has negotiated other arrangements to stay in business. So mm-hmm. we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we will. And we definitely need strong advocate voices to make sure that these things, again, the integrity of this bill makes it through implementation.
Fulfilled. Mm-hmm. So in closing, let's talk a little bit about this Democratic Socialists of America Feminist Branch panel on Friday, which sounds like it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Lucky Lab North Tap Room in Portland, 1700 North Killingsworth Street. And that is the Lucky Lab North Tap Room on the east side of the river. There's a Lucky Lab Labrador pub on the west side, but we'll be on the east side. Can you just say a bit about the panel and what's going to happen Friday night?
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite things about being on this panel a handful of months ago was that it really was centering the voices of women of color, LGBTQ folks, and I think that that's powerful. I think there's ways we can say that we do that and that we don't do that, but I do think that anyone coming out will see, you know, the meaningful and the intentional nature of how this panel was put together and hear from some really amazing folks.
Okay. And there'll be drinks and pizza or whatever there, too, that people can purchase. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully folks will come on out. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes. And they can go on the DSA, Democratic Socialists of America, Portland, Facebook page or website to get more details. Thanks so much, Xenia Juncker, for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Jan. I appreciate it.
Walk out the door. Just turn around now, 'cause you're not welcome anymore. Weren't you the one who tried to hurt me with goodbye? You think I crumbled? You think I'd lay down and die? Oh, no, not I. I will survive. Oh, as long as I know how to love, I know I'll be alive. I've got all my life to live. I've got all my love to give. And I'll survive. I will survive.
And that's Gloria Gaynor with I Will Survive, following up on Jan Hawkins' conversation with Xenia Juncker about the upcoming Democratic Socialists of America panel on reproductive justice.